Alright, welcome to Spinners, the people's show. The people's ideal movie and music podcast from two very, very best friends. We go way, way back.
All kinds of back.
All kinds of back into the ocean of childhood, of teenhood.
Neighborhood.
Of neighborhood. Yeah, I just live down the street from old Stevie here. That's your name, right?
Yeah, I go by Stevie or Steven. I think I'm going to try and go by Old Steve.
Old Steve.
Steve's got a good ring to it.
Yeah.
I feel like his stepdad.
I'd agree with that. I think I'm more prone to listen to a Steve than a Stevie. Stevie, I always, you know, when I hear Stevie, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take everything with a grain of salt
here.
When
we get to the 90s, I'll be Stevie.
Okay.
That's my youth.
That makes total sense. I'm with you there.
And you are.
I'm Andrew.
That's
my name. I'm Andrew. That's all there is to that. Okay. We're here to talk about celluloid, right? That's about that whole business going on.
Not to be confused with cellulite.
Well, I'm not going to count that out.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because I like cellulite in movies.
Sure.
Close-ups on that.
Nothing like a good under the leg,
right?
Behind the back shot.
And then also on the other half is music.
Yeah, so to break it down for you guys, this is a personal review podcast. We're gonna be talking about, I don't know if it's gonna be us trying to delve into the best of the best, or just what we think is our favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Or once we get out of these decades, we're just gonna do popular or new stuff, trying to keep it fresh. So obviously, like you said, Spinners is an allusion to the fact that you got records spinning, CDs, DVDs, film reels. It's all spinning. The earth is revolving,
right? My head's always spinning.
Yeah, everything is spinning.
I'm always in a daze. I'm, you know,
my whole life is a daze.
But yeah, we're gonna get it started with like lists, because everybody is on this list craze right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like the only way to really show us, you know, show the people who we are,
is to break it down
with a list.
Like one of my dad's quotes that he says all the time is, you gotta make a list. That way
you gotta make a list.
All that stuff. It's big on lists. I'm a list man myself.
I'm always making lists.
So we're gonna break it down by decade for a little while. We're gonna start in the 40s. And with the 40s, we're gonna analyze our top five favorite movies,
mm-hmm.
as well as top five favorite artists. Once we get into that, I think the 60s, we're going to switch from artists to albums.
Yeah.
And
Let's talk about the 40s for a little bit, just like an overview culturally about the 40s. Sure. Because for us, it's a little different. We're not from the 40s.
No.
We're not alive.
I'm not that old.
But so that kind of allows us to kind of look at it from a different, you know, vantage point, you know what I mean? And so with that, it's a much more broader kind of perspective, I think, on that era.
We get hindsight, which is 2020,
mm-hmm.
as we all know.
Right, and so I think time being kind of a filter, you know, a lot of stuff has kind of gotten lost.
And we can see what's persisted.
Right, we can see what's persistent and what's kind of, I don't want to say worth our time, but
yeah, I think that's fair. What's worth the time, because if it doesn't, I mean, you could have a pop single like The Twist by Chubby Checker. I don't remember when that came out, but didn't persist. I mean, we know the dance, The Twist, but Chubby Checker is a bit of a joke. If you're still alive and listening, Chubby, I wish you the best. I mean, that kind of music, it's not really worth it if you're delving into the
classics. Because, yeah, but that, like, something like The Twist pertains so heavily to its time.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a product of,
it doesn't quite, it's
right,
the test of time.
Right.
Because time spins, the clock spins.
Mm-hmm.
This is Spinners.
So with that, you know, I think breaking it down by era, I think is always good, because, you know, when you think about the 40s, I always think, okay, you got your Sinatras. Okay, you got your jazz.
Sure.
You got
it's a big band era.
Right. And I think of, I do think of vinyl records, because I feel like, you know, even though they'd have been around for so long.
They hadn't been around for so long.
That's, well, I'm talking, you know, just, I mean, for, you know, the 30s had its records, and the 20s had, you know, some kind of variation of records.
Right, you said the cylinders. I was actually looking into the history. I'm huge on this stuff, and a lot of these artists from the 40s especially, the reason you can't really start any earlier is because they don't put out albums. They hadn't before. The concept of an album was either generated in the 40s or 50s when you'd be putting together all your singles.
Right.
Your 12-inch, 78 RPM singles.
Right, and I think the concept of an album was interesting in the 40s too, because what started off as really in the 40s as a compilation of songs, now it's more of, okay, it's a full body of work, it's a full, you know, cohesive whole.
Yeah, the concept that took hold, I want to say Pet Sounds is usually the first cited as a concept album. And that's looking to the future.
But still, no, I totally agree.
We'll start here. We'll make our way.
Mm-hmm.
I think before we should get into it, we'll talk a little credentials.
Okay, a little bit about... You can start off if you want.
Do you want to start movies or music?
Okay. Our merit in those fields.
We'll start with the movie merit.
Okay.
My first disclaimer, I think, specialty-wise, I'm still Steve. I'm going to be your music guy. Andrew's going to be your movie buff. We both have a big interest in both, but I think the credentials might reveal that it's a little one-sided for each of them.
Sure.
We'll start with the movies. My experience with movies is largely as an audience member. I love IMDb. I rate all kinds of movies. I broke 1,000 on there, ratings wise, and I love keeping up with that. I've been in a lot of spoof movies that my family's made, and that's a great history thing for me, so I've got a little acting experience, if that even counts. Yeah, that's about it for me.
All right, well, if I want to stay on movies, for me, movies have been obviously really big for me all my life. I can remember ever since I was about 6 years old, I always wanted to be, you know, get into acting and stuff like that, which I have done a lot of student films recently.
We've been in a movie together.
Well, we have. We started a movie together. I still do a lot of theater, which I really got into in high school. And of course I like to write. I love screenwriting. I love the structure of screenwriting. I love what that entails. And one day I would like to turn that into kind of a more of a full-fledged, short film. Right now what I really do is I do a lot of, kind of personal kind of short films. I actually just bought these lenses for, my iPhone. It comes with these macro, wide angle, and a fisheye lens. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to kind of use the resources I have here and make these little personal kind of movies. I'm, you know, growing up, I was always known as the movie guy, and I was kind of the go to source for a lot of people
still
in the news.
I mean, I know movies, but you know when they came out, you know how many Oscars they were won.
Oh, yeah.
Against all this stuff. It's crazy.
It's
very cool, though.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where I'm at, movie-wise. And then for music, you're very much a music guy, aren't you? And I can say the same for you, for what I did for you, you know, movie-wise, of you've done for me musically. And then, you know, give me a lot of good recs.
I can get started with the music. I'm a huge collector. Instruments. I play guitar, piano. I collect instruments. I got a didgeridoo, ukulele, harmonica, Jew's harp. It's probably not the politically correct term, but that's what it's called. Otherwise known as the mouth harp. But I love playing music. I've written some songs. I've produced some stuff with a new program I found on my computer. Kind of go in that direction. As far as collection, my iTunes library is a mess. Actually, it's not a mess because everything's sorted properly, but I think I have over 25,000 songs. Right. Most of that obtained legally, which I'm proud of, but some of it, not so much. But I also have a expansive record collection that I want to say is broken 250, maybe even 300 records. It's an expensive hobby, but I really enjoy having tangible music and stuff I can just sit down and listen to. So,
and you and I are similar there. You know, I'm very much, when it comes to music, I'm a sit down and listen to it kind of guy. I'm not one to really multitask with it at all. I remember, I mean, really, I've started to get more I hate to say hardcore into music, though. Like, sure. Last year, I started just, I wanted to expand kind of my knowledge on the industry, you know what I mean? And just kind of like, you know, I didn't, I'd always not had a, like a surface level knowledge of kind of what, you know, the ins and outs of what goes on. And so, you know, I started reading Pitchfork and, you know, Billboard and things like that. And then I started watching, you know, Anthony Fantano kind of reviews.
Not a fan.
I'm a fan. I'm a big
Are
one.
Are you a fan, Tano?
I'm a fan. Tano's number one. And then I heard Kanye West's Yeezus last summer, and then I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like you and I, that was kind of a that was easily my favorite album of last year.
We're gonna have to do just a Yeezus only episode.
Yeah. I mean, it opened up a kind of a chamber in me, you know? I was like, this is kind of the music I had been looking for all my life, you know what I mean? I was like, you know, and that ended up leading me to groups like Death Grips and things like that, and I, you know, there was this whole other world of music that I've been really searching for all my life, you know? And I think that comes from my love of electronic, rap, a lot of abrasive kinds of music, and and so that also has blossomed into more other kind of experimental music, like Tim Hecker, The Knife, just to name a few. And of course, that's led into just more of my understanding of operationally how the music industry works. And so
we all have that awakening,
right?
Similar one. I mean, I did have one with Yeezus in terms of rap music, but it was when I first heard a vinyl record played. I was in my grandpa's garage in Texas, and I can't remember how old I was. I was probably, I want to say 12 or 13, maybe 14, and I was with my younger cousin, and we're messing around, and there's this record. It's an old record. I have it in my basement now.
Mm-hmm.
It's Randy Brooks' Lamplight.
Hey.
And I mean, the record itself is a huge chip taken out of it, but it would still play if you just put the needle after the chip. So we're dropping it there, and it just gives you this kind of swooning melody, and it was just so cool to be like, wow, this is just a piece of plastic, whatever.
Right.
And it's containing this guy's legacy, and it was just, that was, for me, I didn't start buying records till high school, but that was, for me, the big awakening in terms of music.
Yeah, I started getting into more into records just this past year, and I love how, I was fascinated by how primal records are, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
How it's just kind of this, I mean, a more, what's the word, analog kind of way of getting sound out,
it's just,
you know?
It's just dragging a gem across the track, that's
right.
All it is.
Right.
And the beauty of that, it's just amplifying a scratch. That's,
right.
It's just so cool.
And I just love the idea of textures kind of creating this sound, which
in
a, you know, which itself is kind of a texture too.
Right.
And so, yeah. And I've gotten more kind of like, you know, I've always been philosophically kind of into film. You know what I mean? Like, you know, just thinking about what it means as a medium. And so now this is happening for me with music. And what I was going to say was that I've started creating my own music now, whether it just be layering my vocals or you know, getting more into production heavy kind of stuff in like FL Studio or something.
Yeah.
You know? So that's where we're at right now.
Brink.
Right, we're on the brink.
We're diving in with this podcast.
Mm-hmm. So you have yourself a little George Washington.
I do. All right. So our idea for this, which I think is pretty fun. For each episode, it might not be a 50-50 split between movies and music, but to decide what we'll do first, we're going to flip a coin. Heads will always represent film, because you see your figureheads, see your friends' faces.
That's right.
And tails represents music, because you hear the artists, their stories, their tales. And here, I'll let you do the honors. You flip the coin and tell
okay.
us what we come up with, and then we'll go into the 40s.
What if I flip it too high?
It's okay.
Oh, where'd it go? Oh, looking like a heads.
How is a heads? We're going to start with cinema in the 40s. Now, this one, I'll admit, this was kind of difficult for me. I to find mine, I went to IMDb, looked through all my ratings for all 1940s movies. I think I had a total of 13. So I went from that and just kind of tried to pick my top five.
Yep.
And how many do you have?
I have three, a measly three, which I know is pathetic compared to you.
You'll come up with, we'll try and stick to, I think five. We'll see how it works now, because if we want more time or less time, we can go through your five.
Yeah.
Do you want me to start with my five and four, and then we can?
Yeah, feel free. Yeah, let's do the five, and yeah, let's go all out.
Okay. All right. So, my fifth favorite movie of the 1940s would be Bud Abbott and Lou Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Okay.
And
yeah,
let's talk about this. Great. It's not my favorite. Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, that would be Meets the Mummy, which is in the 50s.
Absolutely.
But the Frankenstein one is so cool because it features Frankenstein, Wolfman, and Dracula, all three of them, and I'm pretty sure they're all played by the big three.
Right.
Which are Lon Chaney, Boris Karloff, and Bela Lugosi.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys were just ahead of their time.
I have a special connection myself with Abbott and Costello because when I was about 12 or 13, what I did with Alden, my brother, is we went on this local stage and we performed Who's On First.
Nice.
Which I feel like is a rite of passage.
For, in terms of comedy, just if you want to know comedy, you have to start there.
Yeah, it's so fun and so snappy, and it's almost ahead of its time, I think, too. You know, and I don't know when Who's On First was actually written. I don't know if that was more of a mid-career kind of thing for them, but
I would guess early, because I feel like that's kind of the thing that would skyrocket them
right
to their position.
That's true.
Not too sure either.
That's true.
All right, number four. Speaking of Bela Lugosi, this movie is called The Devil Bat. The Devil Bat holds a special place in my heart. This is a $1 movie I got from Walmart. Comes in one of those real slim cases that smells funny when you open it.
My favorite.
This movie is hilarious. I have IMDb open right now. I got to read you the description of it because it's perfect. And it's a mad scientist develops an aftershave lotion that causes his gigantic bats to kill anyone who wears it.
All right.
It's a perfect plot for a movie.
I'm on board with that.
The picture, there's always this picture of him with these huge goggles. And the reason I love this movie so much is I watched it with some cousins, and that was one of the first movies we spoofed. I was super young. It was a live performance for our parents.
Yeah.
Titled The Winky Bat. I can't even tell you what that meant. But it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, you should. I'm sure you haven't seen it.
Oh, no.
But it is Bela Lugosi, and you can't go wrong with him. You can't go wrong with aftershave that attracts giant bats.
No, of course not. I don't feel like there's much I can add to that.
I'm not surprised. There's not a whole lot. I couldn't tell you how it ends. I don't remember. It's been a while. I'd love to rewatch it.
Yeah, we need to revisit that together, I think.
It's so funny, and at the same time, it's got that classic horror feel.
You think it's a good bonding movie?
Definitely.
We need to maybe do a pull a Mystery Science Theater 3000.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
I think I should start with the threes, because since you're the movie guy, you should have the final number one.
Oh.
Is that so? And then we can switch that up.
Yeah, it's a pretty definitive number one, I gotta say.
Yeah, yours right. It probably is. Mm-hmm. So, moving along with Chatterbox Steve, we got number three is a rendition of Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None.
Yeah.
That book is huge in my life. My mom had a book club. She started a book club when I was in Texas as a kid, and that was like one of the big books we did, and I love the story. It's also known as Ten Little Indians.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a famous poem about the Ten Little Indians getting knocked off, and it's just kind of it's a whodunit. It's like Clue.
Yeah.
Where slowly, one by one, all these people that come together in a mansion, invited by, I believe it's you and Owen, and they get killed one by one. And there's a bunch of versions of this movie. There's one set in Africa that I think was from the 70s or 80s.
Is it kind of a choose-your-own-adventure kind of book?
It is, and it isn't. I mean, it's set in stone, and there's like a definitive killer and everything, but it just kind of leads you along, and you get to see, like, based on the poem, that relates to the death of each person, so they can kind of predict and kind of not know what's going to happen for each person's death. And
sounds really interesting.
It's very cool. Read the book if you can. I'm pretty sure it's short. It's Agatha Christie. She's one of the great horror writers.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not very familiar with most of her work.
That's all right. She did Poirot. I don't know how it's pronounced even.
Yeah.
She has just some other, a bunch of stuff, but mm-hmm. that's my favorite for sure.
Absolutely.
So what do we got for yours?
Okay, well, my number three has got to be... You ready?
I'm ready.
I'm not ready.
Is the world ready?
No. I don't think they are. What is it again? That's right. Okay, so I'm cheating with this one a little bit because... All right, it's Here Comes Mr. Jordan, okay? Which I love. I think at its base, I think is just a great, you know, charming little tale. All right. I performed a version of this, Heaven Can Wait, my sophomore year of high school. I played the character of Max, who is kind of the, I would say, practical kind of character in the whole thing, you know, which is filled. If you don't know, Here Comes Mr. Jordan is about.
Yeah, and I don't.
You don't? Okay. Please, it's about a boxer that dies. He's tragically murdered. And this angel, Mr. Jordan, comes to kind of help him out and, you know, help him. He really brings him back to life in the flesh. And so.
I don't know if I've seen this movie or I've seen something like it.
There have been so many incarnations. I think Chris Rock actually had
it wasn't a that version. Reason. It was like black and white movie of some sort.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I might have seen it, but...
Yeah, it's, you know, and I think, like we were talking about, in terms of timeless kind of tales, it definitely stands up. And, you know, it's funny how I was watching The Twilight Zone the other day, and then I was thinking about It's a Wonderful Life, and we have... the 40s kind of had a very big fixation on angels. That little dynamic between the living and the dead, you know what I mean? Like, and I mean, I'm talking like really explicitly, like a guy with a suit comes in after, you know, your protagonist has died and, you know, he's helping you out, you know what I mean? And it's funny how just we've ripped on that kind of that concept. But Here Comes Mr. Jordan is, it takes it in a kind of light kind of turn, you know what I mean? I think there's kind of an intentional kind of darkness. With you know, It's a Wonderful Life, but this is, I mean, it's filled with whimsy. That's just a good time great. For the family. So, do recommend. But
sounds like a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And you got a number two coming up, don't you? What's your number two?
I do. My number two, and I'll say this right now: my number one and two are both Disney movies.
That's okay.
There's no judgment for that because these are classics.
That's okay.
Number two is The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. It's a two-part, basically. You've got the story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, with mm-hmm. Ichabod Crane, and then you've got The Wind in the Willows, with
right.
Mr. Toad. And I used to watch this movie all the time on Halloween. Really, the Sleepy Hollow one is more Halloween than the other,
mm-hmm.
but they're just really cool tales. If you're not familiar with them, you don't need to read the book, just watch the movie.
Yeah.
That's like a quote you'll hear from me all the time. But... Sleepy Hollow is fantastic. Mr. Toad is—it's so funny, and there's such cool imagery with like his manias when he goes crazy. And there's a prison break, which it always puts a movie high on my list. If there's an escape from prison, I love those.
Right. And, I think my favorite one from this year, it's probably Grand Budapest Hotel.
That's exactly right. See, you throw that in a movie, and you're already going up like at least 1 or 2 points out of 10. So
that's right.
Yeah, it's a wonderful Disney movie. It's probably my favorite standard format.
Disney absolutely, event. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it laid the groundwork for a lot of other animated movies to come, but it's also, you know, it just stands on its own.
Yeah, and actually, one of the fun things about this is, at least the Sleepy Hollow, I'm not sure about Mr. Toad, but the Sleepy Hollow one is narrated by one of my top five for the music.
All right.
So once we get there... We'll reveal that one, but just to tie things together for the decade.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
So what do you got?
All right, my number two is The Great Dictator mm-hmm. with Charlie Chaplin. This is interesting because this is an older Charlie Chaplin, right? And you think, oh no, you
know,
he's lost his touch. No, sir. This is a guy in his prime. I feel like I think he's mastered his craft of slapstick and whatnot, and in such a way that it doesn't feel kind of like, okay, you know, this is funny for the time, you know, I'm gonna laugh along with this and pretend to be, you know, amused, but no, it's really, it really is truly funny. I mean, tons of laugh out loud moments there. And not only that, but I think it's really well directed.
Yeah.
It's got some really cool shots in there. A lot of, you know, I think there are a lot of technical feats in this movie for a movie that was made in 1940.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's, you know, right at the tip top of that decade. And, you know, I feel like the production values for a movie, like an idea like this, where it's just Charlie Chaplin, I mean, you know, going through, you know, it's a Hitler impersonation.
Yeah,
I
don't
know, have you seen it?
I haven't seen the movie in its entirety. I've seen YouTube clips of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, when you have a clip like that of something from the 40s,
right,
obviously of substance.
And, right.
I know from the clips I've seen, I was always like, man, what is this movie?
Yeah.
And
there's so many Hallmark moments in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, they, you know, his speeches and everything, and the pour the water in the pants. Like, I mean, it's just a lot of funny kind of stuff.
Two extremes.
Right.
A serious speech and pouring water in
mm-hmm.
the pants.
And it's funny because I feel like for its time, and I hate to keep going, you know, for its time, but it's like movies, I feel like, because in that decade, there were still kind of under the idea that movies had to be written like plays.
Right.
Where there wasn't really, I mean, any kind of scene-by-scene kind of emphasis, you know what I mean? It was more, okay, this is all going to add up to some kind of thing, you
right.
know? And, but no, this is very ahead of its time. Very funny. And I can't imagine anybody who's a fan of Charlie Chaplin and his career not go and visit that movie because, you know, I feel like you see Chaplin, you know, and you see pictures of him
yeah.
in reference to his career, and it's always younger Chaplin.
Right.
It's always, you know, much fuzzier 20s footage. But this is right up there with this golden stuff. So, and now we're on our number one.
Number one. Like I said, this is a Disney movie. You probably predict it. Number one is Fantasia.
There you go.
Fantasia is an experience like no other.
It sure is.
Off the box. if you haven't seen Fantasia, who are you? You're not a human. You're not from this planet.
Right.
It's one of those movies that I used to watch this as a kid all the time, and I didn't even realize what I was watching. But for the rest of my life, I have these images of dinosaurs fighting to Stravinsky's Rite of Spring,
mm-hmm.
and actual like mushrooms and sugar plums dancing to the Nutcracker
yeah.
Suite. And it's just, I mean, their aspirations were high, and they jumped the bar ridiculously, and they, I mean, you can't even say they set a standard for movies because nothing like that has been done. I mean, Fantasia 2000, I haven't even watched that one yet, but I do have it on Blu-ray. I have the double pack, and I'm sure it, actually I'm not sure, but I've heard it lives up to it.
Yeah.
I don't think it could ever
I find that
beat it.
A little surprising that you haven't seen Fantasia 2000. I feel like
it's on my list. I've got a long list of movies that I've got to watch.
You're always making lists.
Love my list.
Yeah, no, I maybe watched Fantasia 2000 about 10 times over fourth grade.
That's crazy.
Like in class.
Oh, okay.
Which is crazy. I mean, well, I mean, it was
times,
a music class.
Too many times to watch a movie in class.
No.
Do you ever do work, or was this teacher sick for a month?
No, yeah, there was a lot of substitutes and
okay.
a lot of confusion. And,
fair enough.
No. But Fantasia, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think it's an experience. You know what I mean?
It is.
Like, it all these little numbers, you know, all the little musical numbers, they all fit under the umbrella of Fantasia. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love that.
And
it's so operatic. There's just
yeah.
so much, it's just so lively. You know what I mean? Like, and it really takes you to another place.
Most of the pieces in the film are still some of my favorite classical pieces
mm-hmm.
of all time. And as I rewatched it a little while ago, I realized, obviously, as a kid, I loved this movie, but as an adult,
mm-hmm.
it seems intended for adults because it's talking about, oh, this is how you appreciate music kind of thing.
Right.
Not in a pretentious way, but they're like, this is an artist's interpretation of what he thinks this piece is. And
mm-hmm.
they have, like, an intro at the beginning where they're just showing flashes of color and light. And they're like, well, this is
right.
kind of the mood. And they're just
right.
kind of
I love that.
Trying to give you that visual experience.
It's so nice. I mean, it's just, you know, like you said, with the lights and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that is such a beautiful execution of the concept.
It's
you know
the
what
original
I mean? It's,
music video.
Right.
That's it is.
It is.
Fantasia is a 2-hour-long music video.
Video Kill the Radio Star? Kick it out of here.
Get it out. Well, that was syndication, whatever.
Right. I still love that song.
Amazing. So let's hear what you got.
All right, my number one, I feel like, you know, how can you not mention this? It's almost obvious, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Okay. It's Citizen Kane. Let's not.
I have not seen this movie. I'm going to start there.
All right. So, okay.
Take me to shreds.
All right. Well, we're going to end the podcast here, guys. So it's.
No more episodes.
Uh huh.
This was experimental. It's all getting turned off.
No, it's okay. You know, Citizen Kane is not one of those movies they play all the time on TV or anything. You know, it's always regarded as probably the greatest movie of all time. But I find it funny how a lot of people haven't seen it. And actually, it took me a while to see it, too. You know, I didn't see it until a lot later in life. But if you want to talk about a movie that really set in stone, I'm talking the cinematic language here. You know, I'm talking, you know, cinematography. I'm talking, you know, editing. I'm talking all the factors that come into what a movie is. This is that movie. And it is such a... explosion of visionary ideas, right, on the screen. And it's just, I mean, left and right, every shot is so well considered, you know. And this has been talked about for years. You know, what I'm saying is nothing new, but I feel like, you know, you can't go really without, you can't go have a discussion about film, like the history of film, without mentioning this movie, you know.
Then perhaps I'm not. See, that's why you're more qualified as the movie guy.
Well, than the music. No, I mean, but what I'm saying is that, you know, it's set in stone a lot of things, so it's a lot of movies. It was very educational for a lot of other filmmakers out there, you know.
Sure.
Not only that, but it's just, it's such a great story. I mean, it's just like it takes, you know, a kind of story you find in a great American novel and, you know, wraps it up in, you know, cinematic bliss, and it's just great.
Definitely have to watch it.
It's high praise, but it's, you know, of course.
Surely deserving.
Yeah. You gotta see it. But by next time, guys, I promise, our next podcast, Stevie's gonna have seen it.
All right? There's no guarantee.
Oh, there's a guarantee.
As one of my professors used to say, if you want a guarantee, get a toaster. So,
well.
I do intend to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
My timeline is TBA, but
that's okay.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah,
I know it's a great one.
Oh yeah.
All right. So,
are we on music?
I think we're moving into my realm.
All right.
Okay. So, music from the '40s is difficult. There's a lot of artists that you think of and stuff like that, but like I was saying, I don't think the concept of an album truly exists.
Yep.
Existed at that point. It was just a collection of
songs.
And the reason the word album itself came about just from the design of it, because it would look like a giant photo album.
That's right.
You had on your shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was like all these artists, a lot of them came to fruition in the 50s, or they really exploded here and there.
Right.
But,
and it is, the 40s is difficult because, you know, for any artist's discography, it's so murky, you know what I mean? You can't just say, all right, I'm going to find on Spotify this song from the 40s. And it's a little bit, you know, it's a little more complex than that, you know? And so, but that makes it kind of special. I like that, actually. I like the mystery, you know, and I like the murkiness.
So here we go.
Here we go.
My number five, she's one of the greats. I feel kind of bad putting her at number five, but this is Billie Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And the song I have to play from her, speaking of uses, it's Strange Fruit.
He didn't use that
version, he used Nina Simone, but mm-hmm. Let's take a little listen to Billie Holiday's version. So it's great. It's a great song, obviously. That song is actually from 1939. I gotta throw that disclaimer.
Okay.
I had to breach protocol. She, I think she kind of rose to more of her fame in the 40s. But I think with the fact that we said everything is murky at this time,
mm-hmm.
there's a little bit of wiggle room.
I could agree. Yeah. Okay.
And, I mean, that song is incredible.
Very.
So
I like her because she's got her aesthetic kind of nailed down. You know, she's ghostly, but she's slick. You know, and it's just this constant battle between the two, and I like that a lot.
Easily one of the best female jazz singers of all time.
Yeah. With that Blood on the Leaves too, it kind of takes me to like a space, like a southern kind of
yeah
like headspace, you know what I mean, like I'm It's Savannah, Georgia, or something, and you know, yeah, you get the willow trees or something.
And to come out with a song that's so starkly about racism and murder and lynching, yeah. It's brave.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a really strong statement.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to put that song there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving on, we got my number four.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be another female vocalist. Jazz, yes, no. This is Peggy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
She's got some great hits that came out in the 50s, like Fever, Johnny Guitar, if you're a Fallout New Vegas fan.
Yep, absolutely.
But some of her stuff in the 40s is really good. This song is called Manana Is Soon Enough For Me. So that one, it's actually not very like Peggy Lee. She doesn't usually have that jungle sound. Like, if you know Fever, it's nothing like that.
Yeah.
But I think that speaks to her range. And
right. Her music is so much fun.
So fun.
It's always, I was just saying, like, you know, it's almost like, I'm going to use the word primal again. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like you said, jungly, janky.
Yep, it's very cool.
I do like it a lot.
And speaking of having fun, one of her hits that I got a lot of my 40s music I really found from the Mafia 2 soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
One of the songs in there is called Happiness Is a Thing Called Joe. And every time I listen to it, I don't know if she's talking about a guy named Joe or if she's talking about coffee.
I don't know.
And it's just, it's...
I wish I had an answer.
It's a great wordplay.
Yeah.
She's a riot. I bought like a greatest hits album of hers on vinyl that I actually haven't opened yet.
Oh boy.
I just have a big stack I gotta listen to, and hers is there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's great. That's a good pick.
Let's go to number three, and I'm gonna kick it over to you.
Okay. My number three is continuing the trend of female vocalists, Ella Fitzgerald, which I feel like you gotta have. And it's funny how she kind of came to me not through me seeking her out, but it was through a lot of actual usage in movies, you know, and recently too, like The Master had some tracks from her, and American Hustle actually did as well.
Which is the one you...
One I chose, and Spotify quit on me, so if you want to play a song.
So the song is When My Sugar Walks Down the Street.
You know what I like Ella Fitzgerald?
Why?
Christmas, that's why.
Christmas.
She's got a Christmassy kind of voice. It's
40s is such great Christmas music.
Mm-hmm. And she's a good example of just natural kind of talent. You can tell that she's not straining at all.
No.
To go for those vocals, and so yeah, I just love listening to her voice.
There's a lot more clarity to her than Billie Holiday. Mm-hmm. I mean, they both work in their respective manners, but Billie Holiday's got that raspy kind of underground feel.
Right.
Ella Fitzgerald's just right there.
Yeah, she is. She's clean, like I said. Mm-hmm. What's your number?
Number
your number three, right?
So my number three artist from the 1940s is what we got here. I'm gonna go with a classic duo, actually. Again,
right.
Actually, no, it's a trio. And this is female vocalist. It's the Andrews Sisters.
Okay.
Love the Andrews Sisters.
Yeah.
This song, another one from Mafia 2, is Rum and Coca-Cola. It's such a whimsical song.
It really
just feels so cool.
It does. And they're doing some really interesting... You can just hear from that track. I mean, rhythmically, really cool stuff going down. And also melodically, I think, too.
It's an awesome song. I think the reason the way I first found that song was when I was making a list of all the number one Billboard hits on my birthday.
Yeah.
There's sites that can do that. And that was, I think it was 1945, maybe, or 46. And that was the number one hit that week. And I love the Andrews Sisters.
So you said it was all three?
Yeah, there's three Andrews Sisters.
Okay.
And my brother Alex has a crush on one of them.
Because,
he's got a big collection of Abbott and Costello movies, and they actually appear in a bunch of those with live performances. And
that's great.
Yeah, one of them is very attractive. I don't remember which. The others, not quite as much. They're all dead, though, so don't worry about that.
Okay. Well, they can hear you.
We transcend time with this podcast. All right, so let's hear your
number. All right. What do I got? All right. Okay. You're not gonna like me for this, all right?
Okay.
'Cause I feel like it's so obvious that I'm like, you know, just throw me out the door.
All right, what do we got?
It's Sinatra.
What song?
Am I a criminal?
No, you're not.
And no.
To be honest with you, right now we can save a little time. My number two pick was also Sinatra.
Wow. Okay.
So there's no shame.
What more needs to be said? Like, there hasn't already been said.
Should we just play a clip?
All right, let's do a clip.
Here's a clip. This is That Old Black Magic. Great.
So good.
I mean, sure, it's cliche to love Sinatra, but also it's illegal to not love Sinatra.
Exactly. Like, how? Like, you know, he's too good. And him, for me, is like, it's a transportive kind of experience. You know, I'm like, I'm in New York, and maybe I'm just going through the streets. It's just a rush of just light and sound and smells, and it's great. And I don't know how you couldn't, you know, it's just like, it's a much like, who was it on our list that I said was Slick? It's a Slick.
Billie Holiday.
Billie Holiday was it. That was what I called Slick. Yeah. Right? And I feel like if any decade had real attitude, you know, you could say, oh, it's the 60s. Well, you know, the 40s had its fair share.
Yeah. Okay.
And Frank Sinatra is the man.
It's legendary, links to the mafia. Right. Legend. The thing is with Sinatra, I've been listening to him probably before I even knew what music was. My mom is Italian and she loves her Francis. Mm-hmm. And also Dean Martin, which, I don't know, he's probably not going to make any of my lists. But Dino's killer too.
Yeah. So it goes pretty far back for you though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, I think it does for most people just because, you know, commercially, I think he's everywhere, right?
He is.
You know, and which is, I think, for the best.
He's one of those guys that, I mean, yeah, he started in the 40s, but he really, I mean, transcended everything.
He did.
Got his reincarnation, Michael Bublé, continuing the legacy.
That's right. A little Harry Connick Jr. in there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fine, but I feel like Frank Sinatra is so in tune with his own identity that, like, you know, there is no replication of that.
Especially with the whole Rat Pack and that vibe that those guys had. You talk about attitude. I mean, they were running the show.
Absolutely.
And Sinatra still runs the show.
I think Sinatra's interesting because he's got a little bit of the Charlie Chaplin complex that I was talking about. How for Charlie, they think, when I think, or for a lot of people, when they think Charlie Chaplin, they think young Charlie. But when a lot of people think of Frank Sinatra, they think of old Mr. Frank in his office, right? Like, and, but we're talking the 40s here.
We are.
You know?
Real young, blue eyes.
But, I think it's funny how his talent, just, I mean, in a Bono kind of way, is just kind of maintained. Oh, okay, you're gonna stab me in the back there,
save that for maybe an exclusive YouTube episode.
Okay.
It's gonna happen. Let's see your number one.
Alright, you wanna, okay. Alright, my number one, if you have my playlist, my number one has gotta be the Ink Spots.
Ink Spots, here we go, with If I Didn't Care.
Mm-hmm. The Ink Spots, they're so cool because, you know, like Ella Fitzgerald, they've been used cinematically, which I think has shined a new kind of light on their music, but I think already they were very cinematic in nature, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, again, another haunting kind of sounds right here, you know what I mean?
It just sounds like a relic.
It really does, doesn't it?
It's a relic of the band.
Exactly.
And my favorite thing about the Ink Spots is they managed to have this really kind of a successful career, but every song is exactly the same. They have the same guitar intro on every song, and they do the same vocal breakdown towards the middle. Just like one guy in a deep voice kind of replicating the lyrics, "Darling, if I didn't care about you," something like that. They always have that.
Always.
It's perfect. And
I love that.
It works.
Yeah, because I mean it's keeping us in touch with our Ink Spot self, you know what I mean? Like, and yeah, I mean, it really is something else.
No other artist could pull that off, but I mean, I guess in the 40s it worked. I mean, it's fun to listen to now.
Right.
And actually, before I get to my number one artist, I have a favorite song of the decade.
Okay.
What do you know? It's the Ink Spots.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This one is from, it's a legendary track from Fallout 3.
I was going to, yep.
Mm-hmm. I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire.
Yep.
And, yeah, take a listen because it's going to sound exactly
so
like
good. Yeah, it does.
Different lyrics.
Yeah. Don't you love that?
It's perfect. It's almost identical.
For Fallout 3, it was incredible.
It's great. Yeah.
You know, it's funny how in modern media we've used, again, their kind of stuff for darker material.
Right.
And I like that the Ink Spots in the midst of a lot of more jolly kind of, you know, musicians were just that. They were an ink spot. You know, that jolliness.
Like melancholy.
And, right. And not always, you know,
it's
I
not
think.
Like dark.
No.
Dark. It's just kind of.
It's.
Like there's something missing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like retrospective, you know what I mean? It's almost like, you know. And in that way, it's almost nostalgic a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you see, you can hear in just the MP3, you can just hear in the recordings that we have a lot of the graininess from the vinyl.
Yeah.
I think that's essential, you know, and to the aesthetic of who they are, you know, because if you want to play their music in the way that a lot of people want you to hear them as, then you want it to feel like you got it out of some rubble. You know, or you just found it in a seedy little corner, and you know that's how you listen to it. You know, it should be discovered. You know what I mean? It's got to be discovered in its own unique way. And I feel like the Ink Spots is always going to be that. You know, it's so you're number one.
Number one artist. Little background. The song I'm going to play is, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, the number one selling single of all time.
Oh wow.
Over 100 million copies, something like that. The story with it is, I mean, he made this song, like I said, there weren't albums, so it was on a single.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing was, I mean, it was number one like 3 or 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
Not consecutively that whole time, but it would keep coming back. And they wore down the original pressing so much from all the repressings and stuff that he had to re-record the song.
Wow.
And it's...
what could it be?
It's Bing Crosby's White Christmas.
Oh, yes.
Here we go. And the rest is history, right?
That's right.
You mentioned Christmas music with Ella Fitzgerald.
Yep.
And I was at that point, I was like, he's got another thing coming, because Bing Crosby ruled with that one.
Yeah, there's not much else I can say about that, other than it's
is,
a delight.
It is
like
Christmas.
It really is.
I feel like it's Christmas right now. We're sitting here in the middle of September.
I know, because it instills that feeling in you. That's what a good song does.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was like his biggest hit, no matter what he did.
Yeah.
He'd still like throw that on the albums, like, this includes White Christmas.
Yeah.
Because,
which is, it's... And, I like to leave that. On most things that I do, I like to leave it on a Christmas note.
Sure.
I like to leave people
like...
It's the
end of the year.
Uh-huh.
The podcast.
I like to sometimes, if I am having a conversation on the street, I like to take my finger, poke somebody in the nose and say, all right, Santa was here, Santa's gone. And
think of the Harry Potter with the Happy Christmas, Harry.
Happy Christmas,
it
Harry.
It ended every movie just like that.
Right. Don't you love movies that end with the little Christmas scene? Don't you love that?
Every movie should.
Uh-huh.
We talked
even
about,
in,
we mentioned It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
You got your legendary ending with the
right.
Christmas every time a bell rings.
Absolutely. I love it. It's a Wonderful Life. I actually considered putting that on my list, but I thought it was, you know, I thought, you know, of course I love It's a Wonderful Life, you know.
I think it would have been number 6 for my 40s.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
it's probably tied with one of the top picks. But,
folks, we've arrived. We made it. We survived.
Right. We've covered the 40s. I feel like...
We've spun the spin.
Yeah, you know, the 40s is such a vibrant kind of decade, you know. And it's one of those decades that I'm like, you know, I have a nostalgia for, even though I never was born.
Right.
In that time, or, you know, wasn't alive during that time.
I think White Christmas is part of the reason, because we all know that song.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's essential.
Yeah.
And I just want to dedicate this episode, or this whole podcast series, to the 40s, right?
The whole series.
The whole series goes to the 40s.
I'm not on board with that.
No, it's...
My favorite decade is not going to be the 40s. It's a great decade, don't get me wrong, but we got a lot of exciting...
It's not my favorite decade, I just, like... I mean, it's just so... There's something about it, man.
I'd like to dedicate this podcast to the future.
Okay, the future.
The very distant future.
All right.
Like the 2050s.
Well, I'm going to hang back in the 40s just for a little bit longer, if that's okay.
I'm going to 2040s then, so we're both dedicating it
no.
to the
40s. I'm excited for what's ahead. I love the 50s, love the 60s. I love it all.
It's going to be wild.
You'll be surprised maybe to hear my favorite decade, which I think we'll have to reveal.
You're going to have the big reveal.
A little bit later, yeah. So, now, listeners, you're kind of reeled in. You know, you're in our web, like Stevie or Steve. You're going by Steve.
Should we go by Steve? Yeah.
Okay. Well, like Steve said, we've spun you a web. Okay. You're in it, so you might as well quit trying to fight it like Frodo. You know.
We have spun the spun around you.
Right.
We are the spinners, and we spin.
So stick around for next time. I want to make this kind of like a weekly kind of thing.
I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
And I also want to do what I think would be cool if we did our honorable mentions episodes.
Yeah.
Where we just include any movies or music that weren't able to squeeze into the top fives of the decade. But like for each one, like I had that favorite Ink Spot song.
Yeah.
I think we could do our favorite songs from the decade, even if they weren't on a full album that we liked or that artist maybe didn't make any other songs.
Right. I'd love that.
Those are essential.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we'll have much material. We might not do one for the 40s.
You think you could? We could try. On? Yeah. I mean, I feel like, I kind of ham-fisted this one. Still, I mean, my choices were pretty genuine. So,
sure.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to next time.
Sure.
I think this is a great episode. I'm really proud of it.
A
great launch. And I think we're going to wrap it up here.
I think it's a great place to end it.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, no, I'm just kidding. We're not gonna count down.
You guys get out of here. We'll see you next week.
All right, next week with 50s. Thank you, guys. This has been Spinners.